Introduce Dr. Stephen Downs Martin from the US Naval War College to talk about how to analyse war games.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much, first of all, to the committee for inviting me. Whether you'll thank them afterwards is another matter. And thanks very much for turning up. I have to draw your attention to the weasel words at the bottom of the page. I'm required to put them up there. In addition to my opinions, many of the opinions are also the opinions of the world's scientists, mathematicians, logicians, philosophers. For about the last 3,000 years, they're not, however, necessarily policy of the US or UK government, military officers, or any other establishment. That should tell you something about me, my character, my colleagues recognize the social skills of flesh-eating bacteria. My concern is not with people who don't really care about you. What I care about is that you survive on the battlefield and that it's the enemy that died, not you. So I focus on logic and philosophy, correct mathematics, tactics, etc., etc. I was asked to give a talk on how to analyse war games, and I thought to myself, oh God, I've got to spend 40 minutes teaching analysis. And then it dawned on me, first of all, this is a world-class, world-leading research establishment, and if you don't already know how to do analysis, you're in the wrong room. That's sort of a little unfair, so I realised there was another audience. We have analysts in this room who really do understand how to do analysis, and we have people who think they understand how to do analysis, mainly because they're senior civilians or senior military officers, and they've never been told they don't know how to do analysis. So I have two audiences, entirely different, and I have to square that circle. So it dawned on me, okay, I cannot possibly teach analysis in 40 minutes anyway. Okay? The people who don't know analysis would learn, and the people who do would be bored. But what I can do is talk about the pitfalls of analysing war games that analysts face. And that is relevant both to the people who hire analysts to do analysis, because they themselves are not analysts, and also to the analysts who are going to fall into these pitfalls. So that's why I'm talking about how not to not analyze war games. Okay? Let's see, yes, another point here. I've often told Stephen, you know, don't keep telling people what's wrong. How many of you have heard the expression, you know, don't bring me a problem without a solution? Hands up, anyone's heard that? Yep. I'm here to tell you that's a lie. Boss, as we go over the cliff, I didn't have a solution to this, so I thought I wouldn't warn you that we had a problem here. Okay, so that's just rubbish, that expression. And then let's all just be positive and talk about what it's good to do. So you go to a senior officer who's extraordinarily busy, and you say, I have a better way of doing it. And he says, get out of here. I'm already doing it just good enough. He's not going to listen to you. If you think the way he's doing X is absolutely wrong, you have to go in and beat him over the head with it and induce some pain. Because change will not occur without A, pain with the current, and B, a vision and the first few steps of how to change. There's no point in telling someone you have a better way of doing something unless you first convinced him or her the way they're currently doing it. Is bad. Okay. So not only do we have to do good, we have to not do bad. And that's true of our analysis. Anyone recognize this dude? Well, we know he's important. Look at all the, the stuff on him. My first point, message to analysts. You get to analyze a war game. Hire analysts. Stunningly obvious, and yet, the number of senior people who will interfere with your analysis, simply because they are senior, direct quote, which bomb do you think he was talking about? Yes, that's right. Which kind of explosives was he once, but is no longer an expert in? Chemical explosives. If he was once an expert in chemical explosives, he one now. Anyone who thinks they're an analyst who hasn't been doing analysis for 75% of their time for the last 5 years, uncheck the analyst box. How many of you would go under the surgeon's knife if he said, I was a great surgeon 5 to 10 years ago, haven't had done any surgery since? Hands up. Right. So this dude is no longer an analyst. He's no longer an expert in chemical explosives. And even if he was, it's totally irrelevant to the current problem. Okay? So, four kinds of people you are going to keep off your analyst team. 06 or higher military officers or senior civilians, unless, there's always an unless, they've actively been engaged in doing, not supervising analysts, but doing analysis themselves. They're not analysts off the team. The very fact that you've been hired to be the analyst means that that guy has said you are the expert. It's a little odd that that guy then stops listening to you and decides to come in and start trying to tell you how your analysis should go, etc., etc. Okay. Generals are called general for a reason. General, we have one, don't we?
In the room.
Just slid out.
Yeah. You need to speak it.
Yeah, they're called generals because they're generalists, i.e. not specialists, i.e. not expert at what they once were. Most generals understand this. You will come across the few who don't. Okay? Let's see. Yes. Your sponsor, your own leadership. Okay? The senior players you hire to bring into the game, they'll all try to tell you how to analyze the game and what's wrong with your analysis, etc. So you have to learn how to deal with this, and we'll talk about that. Military subject matter experts aren't analysts either. Yes, your game has to have the combat veterans. Your game has to have, if it's a game about logistics, the logistician, if it's anti-submarine warfare, or anti-ballistic missile warfare, or nuclear deterrence, you want the subject matter experts advising you, playing in the game, being accessible to your analysts. There is no known correlation. It's not that there's a known anti-correlation. There is no known correlation between being good at your job and good at analyzing your job. Just because you're an expert operator, it's completely random whether you are also any good at all about analyzing anything to do with your job. You can do your job. Thinking about it is an entirely separate issue. You might be. You might be. But you might not be. And we don't know until you've either demonstrated analytic skill through years of work in it, or you've done the best practices for the last 1,000 years that's been developed in the Western world and got yourself a PhD in the subject. Doesn't make you an analyst necessarily, but it's an indicator. Okay. Again, the surgeon who hasn't operated on anybody for 5 years. So, finally, yeah, I've covered leadership from the sponsoring organization, from any other organization. And then, fourth person to exclude from analysis. You yourself just have the job title, but you're not really an analyst, then you go and hire an analyst and you get out of the way. Because you are not an analyst. Yeah, that was him. Thank God the president didn't listen to him. Okay. He actually admitted later that he was wrong. So I'll take my hat off to that. People who use their positional authority to push bullshit. Gotta watch out for those two. Now you understand why people say I have the social skills of flesh is bacteria. So, what are your qualifications going to be? How long does it take to become an expert in analysis? Well, let's see. 4 years undergraduate training. 3 if you're in the UK and you've had a decent high school education. 4 if you're in the US. And then what, 2 years master's degree, and a conservative estimate, if you're really lazy or brilliant, it's only 2,000 hours a year, but it's a lot more than that when I was doing my degree here. That's 12,000 hours to gain a master's degree, at which point you're a novice in your subject. Okay? 12,000 hours. Say you spend 15% of the time actually doing analysis during that period. I'll do my math, 1,800 hours of mixed education and experience, specifically in analysis, 1,800 hours, recent hours. And you're a novice at that point. So ask yourself, how many hours of analysis have you done? Right? So you can read yourself basic, some literature review idea, how to do historical analysis, some quantitative and qualitative research, ability to write a data collection and analysis plan. You don't have that written plan at the beginning of the game. And then intermediate, parametric intermediate survey design, some tool suites. I'm not particularly enamored of psychology and transpersonal research, but you're dealing with people. So you have to take them into account. Non-parametric statistics. Now you're getting up to, you actually know how to do analysis. Ask yourself the question if you can actually describe the differences, I mean, it was described to you earlier today, between inductive, deductive, and abductive logic, the difference between course of action, similarities and differences between the course of action, analysis and comparison, and analysis of competing hypotheses. There's some very interesting links between the two. If you're having to struggle, you're not an analyst. You might become one, of course. So, by the time you've done your 1,800 hours, and you're still young and not grey-haired like me, you're an entry level. And of course, you hire the right analysts. Take a few seconds. Yep. You need analysts who not only are good at analysis, okay, they're good at analysing this rather bizarre social political game. Okay. It also helps if they have as much education and experience in the subject matter as possible, but that's not their goal. I watched a strategic nuclear deterrence game pursue all the way through, and then we hit analysis. Oh, and by the way, earlier today, Tom talked about the spectrum where at one end you have open seminar-style games, creative, open-ended, at the other end of computer games, you know, more analytic, etc. Analyzing war games doesn't mean you're just looking at analytic war games. You can analyze a seminar game. What were the insights that came out of them? What were the caveats on those insights? How valid were they? Are there any sort of likelihoods you can attach to them? Did the game actually achieve its purpose? That requires analysis. If it's an open-ended, sort of more educational game, did the people learn? And that doesn't mean you have a quick check-the-box test at the end of the game. It means you go back in 2 years and find out. So your analysis team had better understand something about the domain and have access to people who are experts. So watch this game. And at the end of it, a whole bunch of people who were war gamers and war game analysts but knew nothing about strategic deterrence started analyzing the game and coming up with conclusions. Meanwhile, in another room, I watched a bunch of strategic deterrence experts decide what the game had proven. And neither team were actually, you know, particularly good or correct. It required intense conversation between the two groups of people before we started teasing out what the game actually demonstrated. At the end of a game, before the analysis has even been done, you will find senior people walking around announcing what the game proved. Usually, game proves insert preconceived notion that they entered the game with at the beginning of the game is usually what happens. Okay. So, it's the analysts who are responsible for the analysis, but they must be guided by a team of SMEs who are there alongside them. SMEs are not doing the analysis. You also, and analysts tend, you know, if you're not careful, they tend to go off into outer space discussing the difference between epistemology and ontology and all sorts of other strange devices. You want them really practically minded people focused. Earlier on, we talked about, this morning, we talked about the purpose of your war games, etc. I have broken it up into three.
Tom Mount's breakdown is more sophisticated. I just wanted to make some points here.
Experiential games. Okay. Bottom left. He's going to experience something. It's probably hell. And analytic games. Anyone not familiar with the Monty Hall Let's Make a Deal problem? Excellent. You all know about that. And of course, analytic games, hard problems, what makes you think she's a witch? Well, she turned me into a newt, and I got cured. Right. It's the time horizon, as an analyst, you're interested in. You should always be thinking time horizons. Clausewitz says victory is never final, and in some senses, analysis is never complete, but you have to have a time horizon. If you're analyzing experiential game, training, or education, what is the objective? You want someone to understand something. You want them to be able to do something. But for how long? Presumably longer than it takes them to fly home. So analyzing that kind of game, did you achieve your game? What did they actually learn? Requires you to decide how far ahead you want those lessons to last, which means you have to collect data far ahead. The War College collects data from its alumni at 5-year intervals and starts to analyze the effectiveness of its teaching. And it looks at the promotion and the promotability of the officers who go through the school, and it compares them with officers who haven't, and it takes into account confounding issues and variables, etc. So the game analysis doesn't just stop necessarily with the data that pops out of the moves. Okay. If, on the other hand, it's an analytic game, then when the game's over, that's the data. And the analysis and the data roll forward, using Peter Perler's research cycle, rolls forward into future games, future analyses of different kinds, and so on. But you have to decide what is the data collection time, and that has to be built into your data collection plan. So, as an analyst, you start your job right up front with the game designer. You are an equal partner with the game designer, reporting to the game director. Okay? You cannot save a poorly designed war game with a brilliant analysis. And even if the game was brilliantly designed, unless you were there discussing what data is required and how you're going to get it out of the players without interfering with game design, and sometimes that's a trade-off. Sometimes you may have to interfere with gameplay in order to extract the data. Sat and watched a retired two-star arguing that in order to have this great conversation, we weren't going to bother with this game mechanic here that was getting in the way. We're going to proceed with the conversation, as a result of which huge chunks of data that the active four-star general required was lost. Because the analyst and game director didn't have the intestinal fortitude to shut down the retired two-star who was wrong. Four-star outranked him, and the design of the game required specific data to be collected. The objective of the game was not to give the retired two-star a good time for the afternoon. It was get data for a four-star off stage. Okay? So you have to collect data from the players, you have to decide how you're going to collect it. That interferes with game design. This is a negotiation between you, the game designer, and the sponsor. By the way, that originally came out of the King's College Computer Centre newsletter, 1973. March 73, I think. Yeah, it wouldn't be 53. The dinosaurs roamed the earth when I was young. So, that's what the game analysts responsibilities are, short form. That document, War Games Handbook, is available online at the War College. It is a procedural document. It tells you how to run a war gaming organization, assuming that you have people who actually know how to do war gaming, how to do analysis, how to do design, how to do all the logistics. is particularly good for that. It's not a war game research document about why war game works or which type of war game you pick for which type of objective. But you've been told to run a war game and you don't know what to do. You know, what do I start doing at 8 o'clock Monday morning? Well, the first thing you do is you pick that book up and you read, oh, I need one of these. Full of checklists. Oh, by the way, a lot of people have complained to me because of my slideshows. They said there's not enough information on the slide. Well, there's this thing called notes pages in PowerPoint. So go look at the online version. It's got all my notes. So some of the items in the actual long list is participate in the formulation of game proposal document. You're right up there writing the game proposal document. You have to be. Developing research questions, identify the data streams to be collected during the game, and document how each of those are going to be collected, what is the format they're going to be collected in, and specifically which research questions they support. You are not collecting data just in case. You're interfering in gameplay as an analyst and a data collector. Okay. And you write the data collection and analysis plan, you write that document. Okay. And so on. Train everybody. Coherent organization of player insights. That's because player insights are often incoherent. You actually have to bring some order to them. So where are we? So, the diagram, the obligatory diagram. Purpose of the game. What is the purpose? Okay. Overarching reason why the game is being played. From that, you go to the objectives. Now, here's the problem. As been hinted at earlier, you don't get a well-described problem. Here's a problem. I want you to help me solve it. And wargaming is a useful way, please do this. What you often get from clients, and I'm talking to the business guys up top here, and I used to be in the commercial business world as a consultant, what you often get is the problem of implementing the half-baked solution that they've come up with to a problem they haven't actually told you about. So, like good consultative selling. You don't argue with that. You ask the question what you want, and they tell you. But then you start drilling down. It's called objectives analysis. You ask, why do you want that? And each time they give you an answer, you ask, yes, and why do you want that? It's a conversation. After a while, you will have bounded the problem. You know, we need to understand how to defeat ISIL. So I want a war game about the Middle East, okay? I could spend billions and simulate with people and computers the entire Middle East with down to the smallest net, not going to happen. So why do you actually want this war game? So you drill down until you find the priority reasons as to why. Now you've bounded the problem and the client has actually listened to himself and has begun to understand the problem better himself or herself. They may already be there, in which case this conversation is really easy. Third question you always ask, why don't you already have it? Why don't you already have this problem solved? All sorts of fascinating obstacles, weird reasons that will trip you up if you weren't aware of them come surfacing out of that way. And that's another drill down. Why don't you have that? Well, because you don't have this, and why don't you have that? And you drill down on it. And the very last question, the fourth question, is how long are you in position as the sponsor? Because that minus how long it takes that person to socialize the results of your game is how long you have to design, execute, analyze, and deliver the report. And that bounds your analysis. The why do you want it starts to tell the analyst what are the research questions that need to be answered. That will address the objectives. That tells you the required data. The research question, is it deductive, inductive, abductive? Are you looking at hypotheses? Are you looking at creative generation? Are you looking at patterns? That tells you how the data is to be processed. Those two bottom red things are exactly what the analyst has to know. And the analyst has to be right up there having that discussion
about the objectives.
Next, you need the right players. The old guys are chuckling. You need the right players. These aren't them. These aren't them. War games are notorious. The ones that we run, at least. We're a wargaming centre. We recruit players from outside. They're notorious for being pickup games. Okay, even the sponsor decides at the last minute who they lease the form in the office and send off down to. They've got serious jobs outside. You're competing with operational stuff going on. So who gets to come to the war game? It's a mix, but it's usually not necessarily the people you've chosen. The analyst's job is to identify the characteristics, the ideal characteristics of the players in each position. Not just experience, but experience level, educational level, psychological profile. If this is a discovery game, you want slightly paranoid, suspicious people. This is an educational game, you want people who are new and uneducated to be players. You have to, but what you get sent, oddly enough, is sort of just a mishmash. Okay? Survey the players. Require the people who are coming to the game to fill out a registration form. Okay? And as the analyst, you will design that form and you will take a look at the results. If you are doing an analytic game and it's all about 4 or 5 or 6 or, God forbid, 20, as I once had to do, novel concepts, then you ask them, what's your level of expertise in these different level areas? And you ask a few questions that will give you some idea as to their honesty. As an analyst, you should be aware that people in the lowest quartile, okay, of objectively measured competence, see, often self-assess themselves into the second highest quartile. So asking people, how good are you at these different topics, how experienced are you, gives you a bipolar distribution of people who are genuinely good, people who aren't very good, but claim they're good. So you end up with everybody, although it's bipolar, you end up with everybody claiming that they're very good. So you have to ask questions which sort of get at the minimum number of questions that get at how experienced they actually are. And then as game analyst, you talk to the game designer about where those people go in the cells. If the purpose of the game is to explore how two different concepts can be combined, but you don't want a cell full of people who are experts in concept A but not B, and people who are experts in concept B but not in A. The game isn't long enough for them to educate each other. They're going to be talking past each other. You need to find the people who are experts in concepts A and B, and you put them all into one cell. And the people in C and D in another cell. If you don't have anyone who is expert in A and C, then that is part of the analysis that's not going to happen. The game didn't cover it. Purpose and objectives are contractual. That's what you've agreed to deliver. Research questions are aspirational. You won't cover all of them necessarily because the game goes where the players and the adjudicators say it goes. Okay. So get the right players and don't let them escape. 80% of statistics is wrong. Right? A large amount of data inside the game is locked up inside the players' heads. You've extracted data streams from them, but a large amount of it's in their heads. When they walk out of the room at the end of the game, that's all escaping. And a 30-minute hot wash just gets at the emotions. This, you know, it's the storming part of that norming, forming, storming, whatever. Okay? So you really do need to drill down with the players about the game. By the time the game has come to the last day, you should have identified critical key questions that relate to come out of the research questions and to drill down. You don't have to have all of the players there, but teams of about 8 stay for several hours, 4 to 6 hours at the end of the game and drill down. And that's something we've done at the War College. It's a great effect. They don't like it. Oh well. face of someone who cares whether they like it. That's something that I find very weird. Games have to be fun. Games have to be, otherwise people won't play. In what other area of a military officer's career does he or she get to say, this isn't fun, I'm not participating? If war games are to be taken seriously, that's the first indicator that attitude changes. If that's still the attitude, then the military are not taking war games seriously and you're on a high road to nowhere. Okay? Games have to be professionally satisfying. Boot camp and the assault course is professionally satisfying. If you think it's fun, then you're weird. Finally, you must analyze the adjudicators. The adjudicators are actually players. I'm talking about adjudicators, not facilitators. In games which have a book of rules, okay, all you need is an umpire. The umpire is deciding whether the rules are being followed. The umpire in a game of football. When it's an open-ended seminar game, when it's a game of free creek spin, where you have a combat officer, or several, or a team of them, or a team of experts, deciding what the outcome is going to be between two moves. Then I go back to Peter Polo, who says, game's all about decisions. Well, guess what? The adjudicators are making decisions about where the game goes. They're players. Their decisions need to be analyzed too. If you don't, and furthermore, they're what I call uber players. They're monster players. They're the players with the most influence in where the game goes. If you're not analyzing what they're thinking and why they're making a decision and why they're not making other decisions, you're throwing away a big chunk of data. Apart from anything, you don't exactly put ignoramus into the adjudication cell, do you? You've got subject matter experts that are related to your game in that cell. Don't let them walk out without having an entire plan to analyze them. Okay. So, what exactly are we analyzing? Okay. People are not aware of the reasons that move them, even as a direct quote. Even an introspective person with incentives to estimate how he or she would have behaved with different information cannot do this. The decisions made in the game are not important. It's the reasons behind the decisions, and most people can't actually address those. They rationalize after. So why did this cause? Okay. The decisions aren't important in the following sense. They're very poor proxies for what the person would actually do in the real life situation. No matter how realistic you think the game is, I mean, the person knows it's a game. So it's the beliefs and the reasons behind those beliefs. They tend to be robust. People's beliefs in something will strengthen if they're A, given contradictory evidence, which they themselves admit is valid. It's very strange. People's whole reason of being, their psychological grounding, tends to be wrapped up in their beliefs, and they defend those to the death. As in 100 scientists against Einstein. They didn't change their minds, they died. So decide what it is you're analyzing and what it is you're collecting. Okay? Include control, the game control, the adjudicators, if it's that kind of a game where they're making decisions, not just umpiring several rules. Include them as players and extract data from them, analyze that data, okay? And focus on the beliefs, and that requires you to start asking the players questions during the game, after the game, within breaks in the game. Another problem is unclear objectives, okay, in poor design. You're going to run into those. We've talked about the best way of getting to reasonable objectives. Ask the what do you want, why do you want it, why don't you have it, okay? And we've talked about interference from senior leaders. Already covered that. There's the prove this. I want you to prove that my concept is best. Three approaches to this. Sir, you're out to lunch. you're an idiot. That's the professional suicide approach. I can assure you from personal experience that the immediate satisfaction you get from doing that is only matched by the pain that follows. The better way, the ethical way, and by the way, that pain that follows is quite valid too, because you haven't actually served the sponsor. The better way is to say, this is an important issue. You really believe that this is the best way, that you have good reasons for it. Other people are going to come up with why this is the worst possible idea in Christendom. Other people, and you don't want to hear those reasons in front of your boss for the first time and those other people, and you're just standing there. How about, in our game, we do a proper analysis of what are the downsides of your favourite concept. And we only report them to you, but you at least then are forewarned and forearmed. And you may be able to change those, your concepts, etc. Okay. So you get in part of your data collection plan, you absolutely must decide, and there's a few of them, what are all the mechanisms. That table would have additional columns, exactly which research question. Does each type of data that you're collecting address? How are you collecting it, etc., etc. And there are tools that you should be familiar with using. Analyst notebook, visualization of data, SQL, SPSS's IBM for statistics, the stuff at the top, Atlas TI, for handling unstructured text properly, doing statistical analysis of different phrases and how they combine. An analysis of competing hypotheses, there's software available for that. ACH is free. A lot of the others you have to pay for. You should be aware of those tools. You should be familiar with them. You should know how to use them and make them sing and dance. You should be able to bend them to your will. I manipulate them. And questions? Anyone remember the movie? Yeah. Great scene. So, questions. I've left myself minus 1 minute to be humiliated by questions I can't answer. So.
What's the name of the movie?
Marathon Man, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Dustin Hoffman and... is it safe?
Is it safe?
Yeah.
So you touched on what I call the patronage in the good old sense of the 18th century.